On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. WYPR's Mary Rose Madden has been examining the Baltimore Police Department's relationship with the city's predominantly black population in a terrific series she's doing called On the Watch, Fixing the Fractured Relationship Between Baltimore's Police and Its Communities. The series began in June. It will continue throughout the next several months. Mary Rose travels with beat cops and patrol officers and roams the city's neighborhoods, talking with the citizens that they are sworn to protect. Mary Rose Madden joins me now to talk about what she's learned so far. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning.
So, Mary Rose, what have you set out for yourself to do here? What have you covered? What are you planning to cover?
So, what I wanted to do with this series is get out in the streets as much as possible. So, every week, just going out to different neighborhoods, trying to touch base with the police department, catching up with different officers, going out to different community events.
You're learning a lot. From both sides of this issue, you learn a lot from the police you're hanging around with, and you're learning a lot from the community.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I feel like there's like stories within stories. So, and that's kind of really interesting to me. I mean, I learned so much going out during the protests around Freddie Gray, and that's just really continued. There are a lot of people in Baltimore trying to make waves towards community police relationship building, but the years and years of zero tolerance policing in Baltimore has taken its toll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And zero tolerance policing came into effect during the O'Malley administration?
During the O'Malley administration, right. It was sort of a New York City model where they would use excessive stop and frisk, and which led to a lot of racial profiling in the neighborhoods. And, you know, people were arrested and charges were dropped, but their lives were turned upside down from being, you know, arrested for driving while black, walking while black in Baltimore. And that's just bred a lot of anger and animosity towards city cops.
But you have a sense that it is different in other cities, that Baltimore has a particularly acute problem with distrust. I mean, because the crime rates in so many different cities mm-hmm. have risen over the last several months. It's not just in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very few people have answers as to why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the mayor, you know, had some comments about that earlier this week, but no one really is, you know, absolutely certain that there's a particular cause for the rise in crime. But do you think Baltimore is unique and distinguished from some of those other places in terms of this distrust?
Well, I mean, you know, so I'm out there a lot trying to talk to both, you know, police officers and folks in the community. And what folks constantly tell me is, you know, they wouldn't call the police if they themselves had a problem or a need to call the police because, A, you know, as many people have told me, you just don't know how an interaction with an officer is going to go. You could call them with a complaint about a, you know, a neighbor's too loud, and suddenly the tables are turned, and you're the person being, you know, being arrested, and you're not sure how that happened. So in general, you know, folks say that there's just a lot of question marks when, you know, they go to call the police.
Here's one of the gentlemen that you talked to. This is a young man that you talked to for a report that you filed earlier in the series.
So now when they pull up on us, they tell us, like, go on your porch or go on your backyard.
We in a situation where we just got to deal with it.
I don't hear nothing. I don't really hear nothing about nothing being done as far as changing what they doing. Now you might find a bunch of stuff about changing what's going on out here. But as far as their actions, no, I don't see nothing transpiring as far as changing what they doing.
So the person that you just heard, his name, he goes by Jack Boy Dummy. And he was really really happy that someone was out there listening to him. You know, he said that a lot of people, you know, talk to the nonprofits and talk to the cops and the community groups and get into the churches, but not a lot of people go out and talk to the guys like him who are just, you know, just regular everyday people who he feels like, you know, they don't have a voice. And he said a lot of times, you know, they'll be thrown a football around the street and suddenly they're being ordered to go inside their house. And as he said, he just feels like, you know, they don't have any rights out there. He and many others have said that if they try to report incidents of harassment or abuse or brutality against the police, they feel targeted. The next day, those officers will come back at them, you know, with a vengeance.
I mean, they've got gangs to worry about and they've got the police to worry about. They consider them adversaries, not friendly people to cooperate with.
It's an us versus them mentality.
Yeah,
I mean, on both sides.
So the White House put out a report called the 21st Century Policing Report. And they're basically, and this is way before Freddie Gray and that whole situation. There's all this expert testimony that say the police have to change their ways. So this stop and frisk mentality has to change, and community policing needs to. Almost everybody agrees community policing is the way to go. What do people actually mean by community policing?
Yeah. Community policing means many, many different things. I think, like, you know, you're alluding to, it depends on who you ask. But so this is a good example of what I try to do in the series, is rather than, you know, just go straight to the experts and ask, you know, someone sitting at a desk in a university miles and miles away what community policing is, I try to get out in Baltimore and just ask, you know, the people what they find Baltimore cops could be if they did community policing. And so one mother and son had a really interesting example of a couple of cops that used to come their way. And I thought it really showed what community policing is.
They used to patrol this neighborhood. I know of two of them that used to patrol this neighborhood, and they was real nice, real nice. I mean, they did their jobs and weren't disrespectful.
They ride through just to say hi.
Yeah, you know, and see, and ask us, is everything okay around here? You know, and they wanted to know, did anybody need any assistance, anything?
They made us feel like we were family.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That they were going to look out for us no matter what.
That's community policing in a nutshell, when officers get out of their cars and mix with the people they're trying to serve and protect.
Mary Rose Madden, my guest in the studio this morning from her report on The Watch. This White House police report says that police should stop conducting themselves like warriors and start acting like guardians. Kevin Davis has said that he thinks that's a good idea, too. But he's also said some interesting things about community policing. For example, the aspect of it that has police walking the streets, the beat cops. Mm-hmm. Is they're training the beat cops to do some of what they need to do, but they're not training them to do all of what they need to do. You've reported on that as well.
Right. So this, you know, going from warriors to guardians was something the former police commissioner, Tony Batts, was really, really in favor of as well. So this has been passed towards Kevin Davis, and he's also gung-ho. However, you know, one of the first things he did as police commissioner was start the war room, which is, you know, really, really tackling crime. And yet, you know, when I asked him, so what's the equivalent on the community policing side? You know, there's been some restructuring of the offices over there, but, you know, this is something, getting into the foot patrol is one of his main, one of his top priorities, as he would say. He was trying to explain that, you know, during Tony Batts's leadership, he made it mandatory that every cop get out of their car and quote unquote walk the beat for 30 minutes a shift. 30 minutes a shift. So that's, you know, it's not that much time, but that's okay.
Because the shifts are 8 hours.
The shifts are 8 hours. They were supposed to walk for at least, you know, at least 30 minutes. But, you know, what I found when I would talk to people is, you know, a cop walking the beat isn't, it's just not a body on the street. It's just, it's what you bring to it that's really important. And this is what Kevin Davis was saying as well, that you need to talk about the art of the foot patrol, how to be a friendly face when someone needs help, and how to help the public that you're there to serve.
They're requiring people to get out of the car, but they're not necessarily training them about what to do once they get out of the car. Here's a little bit from Commissioner Davis.
Throughout a police officer's day, and it can be in the most challenged community in the city or in the country, we deal with far more people who just want to speak to a police officer. And we have to do a better job at actually training people how to do that. We have to do a better job at training police officers on the art and the science of foot patrol. So we've done a pretty good job in Baltimore telling officers that they need to get out of their police cars and engage in a 30 to 60 minute foot patrol every day. But that's not good enough. So what I've seen with these millennials is that they will get out of the car because we told them to get out of the car, and they will walk on foot because we told them to walk on foot. But what they don't do as much as they could do, and again, this is a leadership shortcoming. It's not the fault of these police officers. We have to teach and mentor and coach these police officers how to engage in meaningful, apparently frivolous conversations with human beings. So that's a leadership shortcoming. That's not a criticism of the officers. That's a leadership and a training shortcoming.
So he talks about, you know, how they should conduct themselves when they're walking the beat. And he talked about something that you don't hear a lot of officers talk about, which is emotional intelligence, which I thought was really unique. You know, he talked about that he wants officers to bring a certain quality of humanism to the job and to, you know, have that emotional intelligence, which is not something we usually associate with police officers.
We're going to talk about mentoring later in the program, and one of the catchphrases in the mentoring world is relationship poverty. And it sounds like there's this great relationship poverty between the police and the community. I mean, so Commissioner is identifying this, that, you know, these so-called frivolous conversations, you know, it's just sort of shooting the breeze with folks, is how you build relationships.
Right. So, you know, so people say, you know, you're not going to know every person on your beat. But if you have shown yourself to be, you know, a reliable stand-up officer out there, someone can maybe vouch for you when it's time to start investigating a case. And I've met, you know, officers who are really, really trying to go the distance flexing their emotional intelligence day in and day out. You know, there were stories about a cop who found a cop who came across a little kid whose bike had a flat tire, and he stopped and changed it. And that wasn't on the front page of any newspaper, and it didn't blow up on Twitter, but it happened, and it, you know, and this story didn't come from the police. It came from a neighborhood guy who just had a photo of it on his phone. And then there's Major Ward, and he's in the series.
This is Major Stephen Ward. He's the commander of the Eastern District.
Yeah. Yeah, he has a big part in the series. I met him during the community CompStat that the police let me go to at some point in the summer. It was really, really hot. I can't remember exactly what day. But, you know, I went out there, and at the community CompStat, this is when Tony Batts was the police commissioner, Major Ward was sort of was explaining what he's brought to his district since the unrest. And one of those things is he's made a pamphlet with all kinds of resources, phone numbers for people, just folks in his district to have. So he gives these pamphlets to his cops. The pamphlets have information about where to get your GED, how to get your record expunged, things like that. He hands these to his officers, tells his officers to hand these out during their foot patrols. They get out there, and during this CompStat, someone from City Hall kind of challenges him and says, you know, leave the social work to us. That's social work stuff. Leave it to us. And Major Ward is like, no, that these folks see us more than any other city employee, and they have questions that we might be able to answer. You know, I want to be able to do that. So it's just really interesting, like, what do you want your officer to do? And so, you know, I asked if I could kind of catch up with Major Ward later and go on a ride along with him. And he, I went and interviewed him later on, and he has literally just a scrapbook of events that he has put together in the last year. Things like a Friday night movie night that he's so proud of. Every Friday night, they set up an outdoor movie somewhere in the Eastern. And the police cook hot dogs, hamburgers, popcorn, juice box. They hand out juice boxes and do this whole thing.
Here's Major Ward talking a little bit about movie night.
One of the great interactions I had movie night was when we had ours at Greenmount and 24th. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of the young men in the neighborhood come up to me and said, who's putting this movie on? Who's putting this movie night on? What organization? And I looked right at him. I said, it's the Eastern District, Baltimore City Police Department, Team 300. He said, huh? The police? Yeah, why wouldn't? Like, who's providing the food? The police? And I explained to him how we were doing. You know, we get our donations from corner stores and how we cook, serve the community, and how we came up with the movie night. And he actually extended his hand to me and said, you know what? I appreciate you very much. This is something good that our kids in the neighborhood can grow up on.
So this is really interesting because Commissioner Davis told me, you know, the population, the young men in the city, that's a population he really struggles to reach, you know, to get the buy-in from the young folks. And so, you know, this was an example of, you know, I asked Major Ward, you know, what do you think you can do to get, you know, to pull in that population? So this is an example of a time when it worked.
This is a complicated story, very nuanced. You're doing a lot of great work on it. And this series of yours, On the Watch, is going to continue for throughout the rest of the year, right? And,
right.
And
yep.
The rest of the season, I mean, not just the calendar year of 2015, right?
Right. There's 11 pieces altogether when it's all said and done. So I was going to follow the year after Freddie Gray's death, and there's a video that goes live today, and the next audio story will go on next week during Morning Edition.
WYPR's Mary Rose Madden, the reporter and producer of On the Watch, a year-long series of reports examining the complex relations between Baltimore police and the city's black community. The next episode airs this next week during Morning Edition right here on 88.1. You can hear all of the episodes on the series, as Mary Rose has said, at WYPR.org. On the homepage, click on the Newsroom tab and then select On the Watch. I'm Tom Hall, ahead on Maryland Morning, the need for more male mentors. But first, here's a Baltimore story with Gil Sandler.